Next up is Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans with Don Kimball, who is himself an Air Force veteran. Friendly Fire is broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. and rebroadcast on Tuesday at 6 p.m. right here on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org.
This is Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. Pease Air Force Base in New Hampshire closed in 1988 but left behind a toxic trail of contaminants. Could these be causing a children's cancer cluster in the area? With us today are Mindy Mesmer and Doris Brock, two women searching to find the truth about forever chemicals at a former Strategic Air Command base that is now a Superfund site. Stay tuned. And that's John Farnham with You're the Voice. Welcome to Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. I'm your host, Don Kimball. Pleasure to have you along today. We are broadcasting from a remote location we call the Sacred Feather Studios, and we're very proud and pleased to be on KURU FM 89.1 Silver City, New Mexico, or on the web at gmcr.org. And now let's go to our interview with Doris Brock and Mindy Mesmer.
With us today, we have Doris Brock. She's a grassroots activist calling in from Colebrook, New Hampshire. She's the wife of deceased Chief Master Sergeant Kendall Brock, who served for 35 years with the Air National Guard at the old Pease Air Force Base, where he started in 1970. They were married for 46 years before Kendall died of cancer, which was consistent with exposure to Agent Orange, even though he did not work with Agent Orange. Also joining us is Mindy Mesmer, calling from Rye, New Hampshire. Mindy is a strong advocate for public health and the environment. She's a former New Hampshire state legislator. She's a scientist with an MS in earth science from UNH, go Wildcats, and an MS in clinical and translational research from Georgetown University. Both these women have been instrumental in getting the government and the Air Force to conduct studies on cancer clusters at Pease Air Force Base, the former Pease Air Force Base, in the surrounding area in New Hampshire. Pease was a SAC base which closed in 1988. It was designated a Superfund site in 1991. In January of 2020, Force announced it was going to conduct health studies amid cancer concerns. And these cancer concerns are from wells at Pease Air Force Base contained unsafe amounts of PFOS and PFOA chemicals, also known as forever chemicals. These chemicals were used in firefighting foam extensively at Pease Air Force Base. In 2014, for example, the Haven well in the vicinity of the base was shut down to concerns about these toxic chemicals. 2016, a community association panel was formed. Doris, you were one of the first people to recognize the relationship between the toxic forever chemicals in the Pease water supply and the carcinogens they produce and the death of people who served at Pease Air Force Base
in Newington, New Hampshire.
Tell us about this journey, and we're so glad that you're back with us again.
Thank you, Don. I just want to say a couple of things. You know, it's part of the history of how I actually got started. I took a year after my husband passed away doing some research, some additional research, because I had done some research while he was still with us and he was sick because we had submitted a Veterans Administration claim and of course he got denied. And so I had to do more research. And what actually got me started was I read an article from Testing for Pease, and they were talking about the PFAS exposure and how the wells were contaminated at Pease. And at the time, during that time, I would say it was in 2018, early 2018, I was extremely frustrated because I had already read some reports where there were chemical contaminations in those wells going back as far as 1977 and then in 1985. And the contamination was from a volatile organic compound known as trichloroethylene. So they had TCE contamination in those wells way back in the 70s and again in the 80s. And back then, we didn't know anything about PFAS or PFOA. So I kind of did not focus on that. I was more focused on, you know, that friends of ours who are Air National Guard members had cancers and many of them had died. And I got extremely frustrated and, you know, really pounded on the chemicals that were used at the base, especially in a couple of job positions like aircraft mechanics, because they handle so many different compounds and solvents and sprays and jet fuel. With that research, I found that a combination of those things, no one has ever done a study to look at the combination of those particular contaminants. My goal was to try to get some sort of study about that, but that's where the whole journey began. You know, it wasn't until perhaps a year ago, I realized that PFAS and the other elements of PFAS, you actually come into play as well, because the Air Force knew about the AFFF foam, you know, way back in the mid 60s, early 70s. And the same people I was advocating for not only had, you know, exposure to chemicals and jet fuels, but they were also exposed to the PFAS over those many years. Kendall served in the Air National Guard from 1970 and retired in 2005. So if you think about that, even if the contaminants, you know, were part of those wells back in the 1990s, you know, he still had another 15 years of exposure to PFAS, let alone the chemicals and compounds.
So a toxic mix of trichloroethylene, JP4, and the forever chemicals has exposed people who not only worked on the base, but contractors and civilians as well to these chemicals, which have been associated with cancer. And when you said that the Air Force knew, Doris, about PFAS back in the 60s, what do you mean when you say they knew about it? Did they just know it was in the water, or did they know it was a possible carcinogen or a carcinogen at that point?
I believe that they knew that it was a known carcinogen at that point, but okay, did nothing.
And the majority of the PFAS toxic contamination in the wells at Pease was their direct result of firefighting foam, which, you know, I was stationed at Pease, and I observed many times from the control tower these drills where, you know, the procedure was foam the runway if an emergency aircraft came in, because it was thought that that would reduce the chance of a conflagration. Do we know when that procedure was halted because of the toxic contamination?
I don't believe it was halted, and Mindy can correct me. I don't think it was halted until, was it 2019?
I think those drills probably went on for quite a while. I mean, we do still have an active airstrip there, so I would assume that they had still been doing drills. You know, and what we've been trying to do is stop the use of this more toxic AFFF foam. It's called aqueous film forming foam, and replace it with things that are less toxic when you don't really need to use the toxic stuff. Leave the toxic stuff, save that for when you actually really need to use it, not during drills or not during other procedures where there isn't really a threat of it going to another building or something like that. If it's in the middle of the airstrip and it can burn itself out with some non-AFFF foams, that's what you should be using to put those fires out. So I agree. It's probably been used up until very recently on the airstrip, if they've even stopped using it at all.
So Doris, your husband, Kendall, Chief Master Sergeant, worked there at Pease for 35 years with the Air National Guard.
Correct.
Now, when the base closed under the Base Realignment and Closure Committee's recommendation, that closed the base as an active United States Air Force base. It's now the Pease International Trade Port. But the 157th Air Refueling Squadron is still there. Is that correct?
They're still there and extremely active.
Now, tell us how you and Mindy got together, Doris, to start working on these issues.
I believe it was an attendance at one of the CAP, the Community Action Program meetings. And then I started attending the Restoration Advisory Board meetings, and Mindy and I got to know each other through that.
Tell the listeners about the results of the recent study that was done by the Air Force and the results.
So if you don't mind, I'll just step in for 1 second. I agree with everything you guys have said. I am concerned about the exposure to the people who worked at the base from the drinking water. But there's also lots of evidence of lots of other uses of chemicals, including PFAS chemicals, in a lot of the other activities that went on in the base. Lots of the maintenance guys were exposed to other chemicals that probably had PFAS in them during the regular course of their occupation at the base, in addition to, as you mentioned, contractors and civilians who were exposed to not only the drinking water, but the things that they were doing on the base. Like, there are some Superfund sites that we know for sure probably use PFAS in the lubricants or some of the other products that they use to do the work at the base. So there's lots of different people that were exposed by lots of different mechanisms to chemicals, including PFAS at the base, which is a concern for all of us. I know Doris and I have talked about this a lot, but this particular study that you just started to talk about was focused only on, you know, a certain segment of that population. It left out civilians and contractors. It doesn't include those people at all. It's on a very select group of people. And when Doris said the Air Force knew about it, there's a history with respect to PFAS for decades of the manufacturers DuPont and 3M, who did studies of their own in their chemical facilities, knowing that these chemicals cause things like birth defects and cancers in the people that worked in their facility. Yet they still, for decades since the 60s, developed these and put these products in all sorts of consumer products, including Scotchgard and things that you use every day. They're in paper products that are in food paper wrappers. So everybody's exposed to these chemicals unknown to them, every single day. But what this study focused on is a certain select group of people who we feel probably are suffering now the effects of the exposure at the base during the course of their work from drinking water and the chemicals during their jobs that they use during their jobs. So that's what this study is about. And Doris, do you want to step in and sort of do an overview of the study?
Let's define what are PFASs. Human-made chemicals used since the 50s, yes, in a variety of products, including cosmetics, grease, oil-resistant products, and firefighting foam. But research involving humans suggests that high levels of certain PFAS may lead to the following: increased cholesterol levels, change in liver enzymes, decreased vaccine response in children, increased risk of high blood pressure, small decrease in infant birth weights, increased risk of kidney or testicular cancer. So PFASs are the quote-unquote forever chemicals, because we've talked about other chemicals here, but those eventually will dissipate. These chemicals, like they say, are forever. These are extremely concerning. Also, we should talk about tell the listeners, what is a Superfund site? What does a Superfund site mean?
Right. So it's not just high levels of these chemicals that cause all those things you listed. But, you know, many scientists believe there is no lower end limit of exposure to these chemicals that do not cause those problems. So many scientists, including the former head of National Toxicology Program, Linda Birnbaum, said there is no safe level of exposure. Very low levels, less than one part per trillion exposure in drinking water can cause a variety of health impacts, including the ones you just listed. Ulcerative colitis, we hear a lot about now in the commercials on TV. Everybody has ulcerative colitis, but that's caused from exposure to PFAS as well. So the scientists do not believe they see a lower end limit, which is what makes us very concerned that there is really no safe level of exposure.
There's no safe level of exposure to a toxic chemical that is going to be here forever.
Yes, that's our concern. Many scientists have been speaking out about that, including Linda Birnbaum, people like Richard Clapp, who's a scientist from BU, who's been involved with working with us on the PEAS site in various ways. So those scientists are speaking out and saying, you know, when you look at things like you mentioned that it can alter the effectiveness of vaccines in children, those are the normal vaccines. They're also looking now, they see an effect on kids who are exposed to high levels, or people that are exposed to high levels of PFAS also have are subject to much higher rates of severeness around COVID-19. And they're concerned about the vaccines to protect us from COVID-19 may also be less effective as of the other childhood vaccinations. So those studies are underway right now, very concerning. When we're looking at something like COVID-19 that's killed so many people in the United States, we want to make sure that we can stop the spread of that disease. And if our vaccines aren't effective, we've got a big problem.
Tell us about the results of the study that the Air Force conducted, please.
Just let me give you a little bit of background about the study. The PEAS Military Cancer Mortality Study was supposed to do an investigation of cancer deaths amongst the military, and they chose the years 1970 through 2018 to do this. And what they used was death certificates using the National Death Registry, and collected, they had information about who the U.S. Air Force members were, base opening in 1956 through the base closure. And the Air National Guard also supplied some manual records for a period of time for that 1970, I believe, through 2009 timeframe to identify who these people were that worked at PEAS. They did have electronic records beyond that. But it was a death certificate. It was a records only check. And so what they were looking for was cancer, you know, and in reading the background for this study, they were really concentrated on the fact that, you know, we were concerned about the PFAS, and don't really mention that there was more concern about some of the other toxic chemicals that were listed there. But PFAS was what they described as the element of concern for the cancer deaths. So anyway, they did this study, and the results of the study were there's some missing information. You know, they have some disclaimers about, you know, they were missing end dates for a lot of the military people. So, for example, one of the tables talks about good portion of the population for this study had less than a year, and which is not true, you know, but they didn't have end dates. So they just lumped everybody into less than 1 year for that 1970 to 2018 timeframe. And it came back, and the results of what they found were elevation in three types of cancers, and then kind of discounted the rest because they fell within what I consider to be the norm.
One of the cancers, Doris, any of the three cancers, one of the cancers that your husband died from?
No, it was not.
Their lung and bronchus cancer, prostate cancer, and breast cancer were the three.
That's right.
That were determined to be statistically significantly higher than the general population. So they compared the mortality rates from this records research to the national, what they call SEER cancer rates, which are the national averages, which is a good way to do it, except that we have some issues with some of the ways that the numbers were calculated. But even so, even with some of the limitations that Doris just talked about, what's important to understand is it still rose to a level of statistical significance higher, statistically significantly higher than the national averages for those three cancers. And I would contend that the rates of some of the other cancers, like gallbladder cancer, several of the other cancers, which we also know to be environmentally triggered cancers generally, were elevated above the national level, even though they weren't statistically significantly higher. You still had almost twice as likely people to get the gallbladder cancers, twice as likely than the national level. So there are some other things that, you know, we're still looking through. It's new. We just got the results on Wednesday. We weren't given them before a meeting with the Air Force about this. So we got the report during the meeting, and we're still filtering through it. But to me, what really stands out is, with all the limitations we know or think about as associated with this study, those three cancers still rose to a level of statistical significance. Others are concerning as well. And when you compare that, Doris sent me this morning again, the Camp Lejeune study, where they did a similar study with Camp Pendleton and Camp Lejeune. None of those cancers rose to a level of statistical significance in their study. But here at PEAS, we do have some of those results that tell us that people did actually suffer higher rates of death associated with cancers who were associated with the PEAS base.
Mindy, are you and Doris and the rest of the concerned citizens that are working to expose this toxin, this toxic contamination of well water in the Portsmouth, New Hampshire area, having to deal directly with the Air Force, and the Air Force represents the Air National Guard, or are you having to deal with both?
We are dealing with both. The Air National Guard is actually the unit that started the Pease Health Work Group based on the interviews that I had done and a few other individuals making some noise about there are too many people that had cancers. The Air Force, of course, is joining us because, you know, the Air National Guard ultimately is under the Air Force guidance.
They report to the Air Force. Okay. All right.
Right.
The results of the first study are out. This was issued in a report that was given to who, Mindy?
So the report was given to three individuals on our health working group a couple of days ahead of the release on Wednesday at a meeting. We were asked to join the group on Wednesday at a meeting, and a virtual meeting, and I guess some people were there in person, including Doris.
Yes.
And they then presented the result. When asked, they did give us the full report during that meeting. So it was kind of, you know, we had asked for the report ahead of time so that we could review it and have a more productive meeting. We weren't given that opportunity. So Doris and I received, or at least I received the report during the meeting. I think Doris probably got a hard copy during the meeting. I got it emailed to me during the meeting. So that's how it happened.
And the name of the report again is?
It is the Pease Military Cancer Mortality Study.
Okay. And it was conducted by who again?
The U.S. Air Force School of Aerospace Medicine.
So the CDC and the Environmental Health Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, they are doing a separate study in the same vein?
They are doing a PFAS study on the community that worked at Pease International Trade Port.
And in that study that is being conducted now, are civilians and contractors being included in the study?
I believe if they sign up, they would be. There was a question on whether the military could be involved or not. And the only military that can be involved in this study is if they worked from the year 2000 through 2014.
When the Haven Well was closed, who was drinking the water from the Haven Well? Was it just base personnel, or was it people in the surrounding communities?
When the base was closed down through the BRAC process, everybody before that 1990-1994 date were people who were either civilians, contractors, or were military personnel or otherwise National Guard people who were stationed at Pease. But the base was transferred over to the public in 1990-1994 timeframe. And now is open to the public. There is a variety of businesses that were constructed there, including two daycares that served some children of the parents that worked in the area. And so the public has been exposed to the PFAS in particular since the 1994 timeframe when it went through the BRAC process and was opened up to the public. So a variety of businesses, including like the Passport Service, which is stationed there. There's a bunch of businesses there. So the public who attends work or the daycares at the base were also exposed since the late 1990s.
This is absolutely unconscionable that they would open daycare centers in a place where, well, hopefully they're drinking bottled water on the base, because Mindy, explain to our listeners how cancer affects children more critically than adults because of body weight.
So there, as Doris mentioned in the beginning, there wasn't just PFAS to be worried historically about in these wells. There was also chlorinated solvents that were used to do a variety of things at the base, including back in the 70s and early 80s, the well, Haven Well, which for some reason, somebody decided it was a great idea to put the biggest drinking water supply well on the seacoast right smack in the middle of an Air Force base airstrip, which I have no idea why they thought that was a good idea. Right. But, you know, with everything else that they probably de-icers and things like that end up in the water system. But one of the things that is concerning about these chemicals, Don, which you so rightly bring up, you know, children are, I call them the canary in the coal mine, unfortunately. You know, their bodies are developing neurologically from prenatal to when their early childhood life. That period of time is very critical. And one of the things that made the state of New Hampshire set some of the, at the time, strictest protections, strongest protections in our drinking water from these PFAS chemicals was because it was proven by Minnesota that these chemicals are transferred to the baby prenatally through the placenta, and they do end up also in the breast milk. So that was very concerning. And then you look at things like babies born, as you said, smaller circumference, head circumference, lower birth weight. Where in your body are those babies lacking in birth weight, which is very concerning? You know, what part of their body is affected by these chemicals that's making them lighter when they're born and their head smaller?
So, Mindy, you know, is there a childhood cancer cluster in the area?
That's an important thing to talk about here also is, you know, the reason I got involved in this is back in 2014, I identified a pediatric cancer cluster in rye. Well, come to find out 2 years later that the cancer cluster is a double cancer cluster of two different rare forms of pediatric cancers. And it's over the five-town area, including Portsmouth, Newcastle, Rye, Greenland, and Northampton.
Is that because people were hooked up to the same water supply?
You know, because this is always the problem with cancer, it's difficult to tie causation with the outcome. Sure. Association is easy, like we're doing here. You know, not easy, but, you know, we can tie associations. You know, these people at Pease who are working at Pease have a higher level of environmentally triggered cancers. We can't say exactly what the cause is. But, you know, with the children in particular, if you have rare cancers, not only do we have not enough research put into what causes pediatric ailments in general, but when you talk about pediatric cancers, trying to determine the cause of those is really hard. But, you know, I say there's a smoking gun there. All the kids in these areas, including my town and Portsmouth, have PFAS in their drinking water system. I have it. I just put in an expensive home treatment system just yesterday, started it up in my house. You know, I think there's a smoking gun that all these people are being exposed to the same thing in their water systems, including the general Portsmouth water system that's concerning. And the state of New Hampshire has the highest rate of pediatric cancer in the nation.
State of New Hampshire has the highest rate of pediatric cancer in the nation.
Correct.
And you think there's a direct correlation between that and the PFAS chemicals from Pease Air Force Base?
There's certainly a smoking gun. We have a massive contamination of PFAS in the southern New Hampshire area, Merrimack, Litchfield, Londonderry, Bedford. We have a lot of PFAS contamination in the state. And so what I would like to do is say, we know these chemicals are bad for us. We know there's a high rate of cancer. Let's do whatever we can to limit the exposure of everyone to these chemicals, whether or not we can tie them, you know, with a strong line from A to B to say that that's causing it. Let's just prevent what we know causes cancer. Why do we need to, let's be as protective as we possibly can, be precautionary, a precautionary approach. We know these chemicals are bad. Let's do whatever we can to remove them from the environment.
Doris, are there any other grassroots citizens groups from any other areas of New England or the country that you folks are working with? Like, it was just recently revealed that Burlington, Vermont, that the base up there has a severe problem now with PFAS.
I've been just reaching out. I've been trying to find somebody in the Vermont Air National Guard, you know, that I could talk to. Most of the people that I knew in the Vermont Air National Guard have retired or are no longer with us. I've talked to some people from Westover Air Force Base in Massachusetts, and they're having, you know, similar issues, at least the people I've talked to. I've mostly been working with people out in Michigan, because, you know, they're like at the forefront of the whole PFAS issue. So, you know, I'm hearing from more and more people across the United States. California is another state where I've talked to a few people at air bases out there. Similar issues. People are being more vocal now, you know, so I think there's a push to help the military. It's just, it's really hard getting through the red tape of military and the DOD, you know, concerning all of this information.
You are listening to Friendly Fire on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org. And now, back to Friendly Fire with Don Kimball.
If you've just joined us today, our guests are Doris Brock, a grassroots activist calling us from Colebrook, New Hampshire. Doris's husband, Kendall, was a chief master sergeant who started working at Pease Air Force base for the Air National Guard in 1970. He was there 35 years and died of cancer. And we suspect that it was from toxic exposure at his job. Also joining us is Mindy Messmer. She's a former New Hampshire state legislator, a scientist. She's calling in from Rye, New Hampshire. Doris, you had mentioned that you are reaching out to other activists in other states. And in California, back in February of 2020, there was an assembly bill, it's Assembly Bill 756, that reduced by almost half the amount of allowable PFAS and PFOA chemicals in drinking water. But as Mindy has said, there really is no safe level. It's similar to radioactivity, where they say, well, you know, there's a safe level of radioactivity, but we know that radioactivity is cumulative. It really is no safe level. Is there pending legislation now in New Hampshire?
We've done some work on, like I said, we want to try to limit as many environmental exposures as we can. So New Hampshire has passed legislation, filed it into law, even though 3M, one of the manufacturers, took us to court to block the implementation of drinking water standards. We still overcame that by writing them into statute. So we now have regulations on our drinking water for 4 of the 9,200 PFAS chemicals we know exist right now. But we also have some of the strictest in the nation protections on our drinking water for arsenic and methyl tert-butyl ether, the MTBE additive to gasoline. We also have the strictest protections for those. So one by one, we're trying to push for the state of New Hampshire to lead in regulating these exposures to environmental cancers and, you know, reduce the environmental cancers by limiting exposure to environmental toxins. We've got a long way to go, obviously. I mean, New Hampshire, I'm hopeful that the arsenic levels coming down to where they are right now will eventually result in a lower rate of cancers associated with bladder cancer. But we also have the highest rate of bladder cancer in the nation here in New Hampshire. We have the highest rate of breast cancer in the nation. We have the highest rate of esophageal cancer in the nation. And lots of other cancers are up there on the top 10 list for New Hampshire. But so all of these things, you know, should be addressed through one by one, trying to eliminate these from our environment, but we've got a long way to go.
Mindy, talk about the conflict between, we know that there's no safe level, but the EPA sets a limit for allowable parts per trillion, and states can also set a limit for parts per trillion. Whose is higher and whose is lower?
This is the problem. EPA, so we would love to be able to rely on the federal government, the EPA, to set standards for these things. And this, a lot of times the state will point at the federal government and say EPA is not doing their job, or they haven't done it. EPA has not set an enforceable standard since 1996. So 1996 was the last time they came out with a strong enforceable standard for TCE. They haven't done any enforceable standards since 1996 for anything. So what that has done is people like me who are in the legislature are pushing in our states at our state levels to enforce, to put in place regulations to prevent environmental exposure. You know, what that has done is forced the states to be proactive, which is great, except that, you know, we should have the support of the federal government. So it's not just, you know, a recent development in the EPA, it's actually a problem for a long time that they have not been setting. They haven't been aggressively looking at these things and setting standards. Now, the Biden administration has said a lot of stuff about, and the new EPA administrator, Michael Reagan's from an area down south where there's a lot of PFAS contamination. So as activists and advocates, we're hopeful that that will come through with EPA acting to enforce some strict standards. You know, we've got an industry that is out of control and doing whatever they so please with 9,200 of just these PFAS chemicals alone in products that you use every single day without you knowing. So we are all being exposed. And what they do is when they feel like we're on their tail, we're coming up with enforceable standards for 4 of them, they'll make a slight modification to the chemical structure so they can call it something else and continue to make money off of it while we're trying to catch up. So we need to change things about how we do things here in the United States, you know, make it more like some of the things that the European agencies do, where they they really take a more precautionary approach before they approve chemicals for use. Right now, you know, many of these, all of these 9,200, I think, pretty much got through a loophole that allowed them to get through the process of being allowed to be put into use, widespread use. They're sort of grandfathered in. So that's where we're left with now, is trying to catch up. And the states are having to one by one try to look at health studies, which take a really long time. Things like this study, you know, we're talking about today, took 2 years for the Air Force and the others to come out with these results. So these studies take a really long time, and we're way behind the industry in terms of regulating things or looking at the health effects of these chemicals.
And certainly we have our work cut off for us, because as the pandemic has exposed, the CDC is not the most efficient governmental agency that there is. A lot of people have lost confidence in the CDC because of the way that they reacted or did not react to COVID-19. And the CDC has created now an agency for toxic substances and disease registry. Talk about why they needed to create this agency and what does it do?
You know, they're tasked with coming up with looking at health studies, coming up with recommendations. But again, you know, we're still waiting in Southern New Hampshire for them to complete some private and municipal well studies that they're doing with respect to the people over in the Merrimack area that have been knowingly exposed. Now we know since 2016, when they first detected PFAS chemicals broadly in the water system, we still don't have 2021. We still don't have the ATSDR studies that look at the private well exposure and the public well exposure in that area. So it takes a really long time for them to move on things. And, you know, they're a part of some of the work that we're doing here. They're coming up with, we're pushing them to come up with things like how to talk to your doctor about your PFAS exposure, to come up with good recommendations about how to talk to your physicians. But, you know, we're frustrated on the front lines here that they haven't moved fast enough, to be honest. And we try to continually push them to advance in these areas.
Doris, talk about the grassroots activism that you and other spouses and people who were stationed at Pease, civilians who were contractors there, are doing and have been doing to network to try to get the public's attention about these critical issues to our health.
Well, I think trying to get the public's attention, I'm coming at it from a military perspective. There's active service and there's also National Guard service that when we talk about, you know, communities getting studies or looking at things, where the military is actually excluded from any of that because they have so-called occupational exposure. You know, so how do we move past that to get what they need to address the cancers that they have? So the things that I'm pushing for, you know, are the bills that are coming out for veterans, families, civilian contractors that worked on these bases, the communities surrounding the bases. I'm looking for some recognition and admit that there was an issue and take care of the people and the families that served our country. No one's taking care of our military and their families. The active service has to go through hoops to try to get, you know, the Veterans Administration to accept their disability claims. The National Guard is excluded from that unless they have 90 days of active service. My point is that when you spend more than 10 or 15 years on a base as a National Guard person, that you are entitled to be called a veteran, which they just got the status a little while ago saying that, you know, it's okay for you to be a veteran, but they have no benefits from our government, you know, so they're left in limbo.
Doris brought up something really important. It's not just the actives that were stationed at the base. They often live on base housing with their families, and their families are entirely left out of all of this.
You know, and the families, you know, have reached out. I've heard from many families, you know, where the service member may have passed, but, you know, their children were affected by living on the base at the base housing. You know, they knew the hospital was testing the water. You know, once a month, the hospital was testing the water in their base housing, but they were never told why it was being tested or that there was a problem. And of course, those children have grown up, and I hear, you know, many have had autism. Many have, you know, cancers.
Autoimmune issues. Yeah.
Autoimmune issues.
Let's talk about the PEASE study. PFAS health effects of the PEASE study, which is being run by the PEASE International Trade Port. Why is the PEASE International Trade Port running the PEASE study?
You know, there's two studies going on right now, actually, with respect to people associated with that were possibly exposed to the water at PEASE. I'm not the best person to filter those two studies out, but I do know that, you know, they're looking at things like vaccine efficacy and things like that in the kids that were exposed. There were 3,000 people tested for PFAS in their blood back in 2015 and 2016, I believe it was. And those 3,000 people, of those people, there were 350 children that showed elevated levels of PFAS in their blood, which is about twice the national average. Of PFAS in their blood from the exposure, which is interesting because it was just exposure, you know, during like daytime visits or at work. So they weren't living there at the time, but they still accumulated quite a bit of this PFAS in their body from just incidental exposure during their workday or the time they were at the daycares. But there are two studies going on. I think there's now a central number you can call. Yeah.
The PEASE study is to study, of course, the PFAS health effects. And I don't remember I was stationed at PEASE for the 4 years that I spent in the Air Force. I lived on the base for two of those 4 years. And I decided to, because of meeting both of you, and this is how I found out about it, I decided, well, I wanted to be part of it. One was to see how it affected me. And two was to, this is an issue that the public needs to be educated on. And I thought, well, what better way to find out about it than become a participant? So last month I went to the clinic and they took some urine and blood samples, and I have not heard back from them yet. Information that they put out in a packet said that CDC and ATSDR want to understand more about PFAS human health effects since little is known, and because some studies have shown that PFAS may harm human health. So there is a study going on of people who were stationed at PEASE. It says that the participants' results are handled by the CDC and ATSDR, and it says the results will be available after the study ends, but it doesn't say when the study is going to end. So if people are interested in participating in the study, they can email PEASE study, one word, PEASE study, and the P in P is capitalized and the S in study is capitalized. PEASE study, one word, at cdc.gov, or you can call 800-CDC-INFO. Again, 800-CDC-INFO, and to find out if you can participate in this study. Certainly a very, very concerning issue for people in the surrounding community of the former PEASE Air Force Base or Strategic Air Command Base, where they extensively used PFAS, quote-unquote, forever chemicals. And as a result, wells were contaminated and people have been dying of cancer. There's the largest cancer cluster, children's cancer cluster in the United States, in the area. It's truly a very, very concerning issue, especially when, like you said, Mindy, there is no safe level of these chemicals. So let me ask you, in the time we have left, Maine, the state of Maine is right across the Piscataqua River from the former PEASE Air Force Base, now the PEASE International Trade Port. Is the state of Maine concerned at all about this?
Let me just go back on that for a minute on that overly qualifying language that you read that said some cancers or some illnesses associated. I just want to make people know that there was the biggest ever epidemiological study done on 70,000 people in Parkersburg, West Virginia, around a DuPont facility there, where attorney Rob Bellott, you know, got this epidemiological study going, the largest ever human health study done in the history of the world that showed connections between PFAS exposure at very low levels, 50 parts per trillion at the time, and six outcomes, cancers, kidney and testicular cancer, ulcerative colitis, high cholesterol, a couple of other things. But for me, that is very compelling evidence. So I take issue with that overly qualifying language about some people think, some people, instilling doubt, you know. And since that time, there have been countless other studies which have looked at things like male reproductive hormone impacts, female reproductive hormone impacts from these in younger children and teens. And, you know, the other studies we talked about at the beginning, more the efficacy of vaccines, all of these things, very concerning. They signal impacts to the immune system, to the reproductive system. There have been studies where they have shown now that most men have severely reduced sperm count. And that, you know, that is troubling. All of this is very troubling information. I take issue with the overly qualifying language presented by the people that wrote that supporting document for the study. So everybody, you know, if you have been exposed, you think you could qualify, you're not sure, I would still call and see if you could get into that study. The more people that make noise, the better off we all are. And with respect to Maine, you know, Maine has trailed New Hampshire in terms of addressing these PFAS chemicals with regulation. There's a big issue in Fairfield, Maine. I don't know if you heard about that, where PFAS waste from, they think, maybe paper mills caused massive contamination of private wells. So I think Maine is kind of behind New Hampshire in terms of understanding the effects of PFAS and regulating them in their drinking water systems. They haven't come up with enforceable drinking water standards yet in Maine for any of the PFAS chemicals, as far as I know. So we haven't, at least I haven't heard, maybe Doris has heard some talk about Maine people.
Yeah, they recently had on TV here how some of the fertilizers are now contaminated with PFAS.
Yep.
Also, there's sludge that people use to spread on their fields is also a big case in Arundel where the sludge is contaminated with PFAS. Doris, let's talk about the wild card here, the elephant in the room, the Veterans Administration, and how they are handling toxic exposure from PFAS, and we know that your husband was denied VA benefits because of this. And recently, just to give you a little background, the VA just announced that they have added three more maladies to the very long list of things that the VA will recognize and give benefits for due to exposure from Agent Orange. Now, we're talking 50 years of Agent Orange exposure, and they're just adding three more maladies to it. The VA is glacial in the way that it moves to protect and support veterans. What's happening with PFAS and the VA?
I think it's a very similar thing. It's just moving extremely slow. You know, there's legislation out there, but just to give you an example, there was four or five PFAS bills, you know, introduced way back in 2015 in that Congress. And of course, every time the Congress changes, they throw out those bills. They've been introduced now in four Congresses and have gone nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. They're introduced and they just sit there.
Industry lobbying, like you said, 3M and companies like that are lobbying Congress to drag their feet on this, and Congress is trying to light a fire under the VA, but they can only do it if they have the votes. And of course, we know that bipartisanship, unfortunately, has gone out the window, and the American public in general and the military personnel and their families in particular are left holding the bag. Our guest today, Mindy Metzmer. She is a scientist and a former New Hampshire state legislator, calling in from Rye, New Hampshire. Doris Brock is a grassroots activist who has rallied the community to fight toxic exposure from PFAS chemicals after her husband of 46 years, Chief Master Sergeant Kendall, died from cancer, which she suspects And perhaps we'll never know, Doris, unfortunately, we're sorry for your loss, exactly where that cancer came from. There are groups in the country that are fighting this. Folks can go to Civilian Exposure, and that group is definitely active in helping to expose these forever chemicals of, like what Mindy said, there are no safe levels of PFAS, these forever chemicals. Mindy, closing thoughts.
I'm so happy to be able to come to talk to you today with Doris, my great friend Doris, about these important issues. I thank you for giving us this avenue to talk about it. The more people that know about this, the more people that get involved, the more people that talk to their friends and neighbors, the more people that fight for our veterans who, you know, we owe it to them to protect them when they come home after they've protected us in their service to this country. And it's just really important for people to get involved in advocating for change and to be that voice on the other side of these industry lobbyists that like to instill doubt, like to, prevent us from protecting the public. And it's just so important to be able to come here and speak with you today. So I really appreciate it, Don.
What can people do? Should they be writing to their state legislators? What's the most effective way right now that citizens can help? Where should they direct their energy to? The state or the Air Force or the EPA or the White House? Where should people go?
Well, all of the above. We're so grateful to have wonderful federal representatives here in the state of New Hampshire. Senator Shaheen has been on the forefront of fighting for all of these things and other things as well, on behalf of veterans and for the public in general, through her position in the Senate, and Senator Hassan as well as Congressman Pappas and Congresswoman Custer have been phenomenal advocates for us here. So, you know, supporting them when things come up by calling their offices and telling them thank you for doing this. We formed New Hampshire Safe Water Alliance in 2016, which started out as a Facebook group. And it's an advocacy group where we let people know what they can do to help when things are coming up in the state legislature, that they can call the governor or call their state senators or call their state legislators. We let them know when they can, when their input is needed. Doris also started, which she can talk about, another Facebook group, which we cross advocate for all of these things together. And we'll let you know when you can call up Senator Shaheen and support some of the efforts that she and others are making in DC as well.
So people can go to the New Hampshire Safe Water Alliance on Facebook to find out more information about how they can protect themselves and their families from these forever chemicals. Doris, closing thoughts?
Well, first, I want to thank you for having me on the show. And I truly am so blessed to have Mindy as a friend and an advocate with our group. And she's just been a wealth of information for me. So I do want to thank her for that. And my thoughts are that, you know, I would like to see a lot of things happen. As you know, right now, what I really need is I need for at least our military population to attend the PEAS mortality study meeting that we're going to have for the public, military public, on June 23rd. I need them there in order to make this move forward, you know, to the next step, at least for our group. And so, you know, that's extremely important.
That meeting is open to the public, is it?
It is not open to the public. However, if you would like to attend, all you need to do is tell me that you'll be there and I will have your name on the list at the gate. I continue to work looking for some work with the Veterans Administration because they need to address some of the stuff. I have noticed that with the new Veterans Administration secretary, that they're talking the right language. They want to have a study to look at toxic exposure. Unfortunately, I think that will happen after there's a population out there that will die before anything happens, similar to the Agent Orange. But at least toxic exposure is on their wavelength. I'm thankful there.
Well, Doris Brock and Mindy Messner, thank you so much for being here again on Friendly Fire. It's great to have you back again, and realize that there are water protectors all over the nation and indeed the world who are with you in this fight to save our water, because as Corbin Harney, the spiritual leader of the Western Shoshones, used to say, we only have one air, we only have one water. When that's gone, it's gone. And I will wish you both many Wakani, which is Lakota for water is life. And right now, as we speak, There are more than 2,000 water protectors are traveling from across the country to join frontline Indigenous leaders for the historic three-day Treaty People Gathering in Minnesota. So go to 350.org to find out more information about this gathering in Minnesota, and that is to stop an oil pipeline that is going through Indigenous land up there. There are so many threats to our air and our water. Thank you so much for the work that you both do. Best to you both.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Don.
And we hope you enjoyed today's program with scientists Mindy Messmer and Doris Brock, both of New Hampshire. For more information on the PEAS study, you can call 1-800-CDC.info. That's 1-800-232-4636.
Sergeant R.J. Anderson's dream was to take to the skies.
I've always wanted to be a soldier, but my ultimate goal was to be a pilot. I think I was meant to fly. I had just applied to be a part of the 160th SOAR regiment, and I was going to airborne school that next Monday. So I decided to go on a motorcycle ride with my buddies. We were going through a turn, and that's all I remember. That's the day everything changed. I was told by the doctor that I would never walk again. Thanks to Paralyzed Veterans of America, competing in adaptive sports lit my fire again. They help you transition for the rest of your life to that individual that you want to be. Sports like hand cycling really pushes you to find who you are in that redefining moment after injury. With PVA Sports, I've found my freedom. Now when I think about my future, the possibilities are endless.
For more information, visit PVA.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
And here in Friendly Fire, we continue to advocate for President Biden to grant clemency to United States Air Force veteran and whistleblower Reality L. Winter. Please call the White House at 202-456-1414, 202-456-1414, and ask President Biden for clemency for United States Air Force veteran and whistleblower Reality L. Winter, who demonstrated that there was Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election by releasing one classified document. Thank you. Well, it looks like that's a wrap from the Sacred Feather Studios. Thanks for tuning in. Hope to see you next week here on Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. Special thanks to Ken Kepler. Until next time, everybody, stay safe, be well, and as always, peace and love.
You have been listening to Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans with Don Kimball, who is himself an Air Force veteran. Friendly Fire is broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. and rebroadcast on Tuesday at 6 p.m. right here on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org.